I think that you've talked about things you don't know about the internet. That might be a great time for our next segment.
All right, then we'll go there.
That's as you may recall, on the Morning Edge.
The Morning
about
Edge.
About 5 years ago, right. We had Mark Edge, ironically, on the Morning
the
Edge. He was one of the co-hosts of Free Talk Live, which is on something like 150 radio stations now, and he was an early Bitcoin. Talker about Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin is it's now called a cryptocurrency, but back then it was just an online currency, was how it was being described. And he had talked about the first time he had gone out with an early user, early promoter of Bitcoin, and the promoter said, well, come on, I'll buy you lunch with Bitcoin. And then we got to lunch, he said, well, Mark, can you pay the tab with dollars? And I'll give you Bitcoin to reimburse you. And so Mark paid the tab. And at the time of that show, not our show, but the show that he was talking about, the Free Talk Live, when they started talking about it, it was about $45 to a Bitcoin. Now, currently, we'll quote a price, but by the time Mark Edge had come here, it had gotten as high as around $900, but had collapsed. Because the means of exchanging Bitcoin was a place called Mt. Gox, I believe. And I'll double check that in a moment. But the point being that exchange had originated as an online exchange of Magic the Gathering cards. Now, I know you don't play Magic the Gathering, but it's not a Dungeons and Dragons type. But it is a fantasy game that was played with cards, and people collected the cards and trade them. So that not only did they have the functional use in the playing of the game, there was a collector value to them, too, or a perceived value, if you will, which comes in whenever you're talking about currency and things like that. So this online trading card, role-playing trading card exchange, became the major exchange of Bitcoin, this new currency that people said we're going to be surpassing national currencies. It would be a global currency at one time, which sounded totally crazy if you're exchanging it on a trading card exchange. But anyway, that thing grew and grew until it couldn't support itself anymore, structurally, and it collapsed, and then Bitcoin collapsed. I think it went down into $400 or $500 range and was languishing in that area when we did the Morning Edge and talked about
it. Right, I recall.
Well, I am pulling out my phone right now because it's a whole different world now 5 years ago. And I'm pulling out an app called Coinbase. And there are actually dozens and dozens of apps you can load on your phone. This is the biggest one. It actually has insurance for people that trade on this thing. Just like if you go to Merrill Lynch and they have insurance on their accounts, this has insurance on its account.
If you lose $100,000, you get $100,000 back?
I don't know. I don't have to worry about $100,000. I'm pretty sure only one that loses my $200, I probably get my $200 back.
If you had 200 Bitcoins way back then, you'd have...
Well, if you had one Bitcoin, at 7 years ago, you had about $45. If you had one Bitcoin 5 years ago when Mark Edge was on a show, you had somewhere between around $400. And if you have one Bitcoin today, it's worth $2,565, and it appreciated since yesterday $143.
Wow.
So, oh yeah. Now, if we look for a week, it's gone up $400. If we look at a month, it's gone up $900. If we look at a year, it's gone up $2,000.
It makes gold look pretty shabby.
400% return. Well, we have another thing called, and people, I will let you in on what these other things are in a moment, but Ethereum, which is possibly going to be even bigger than Bitcoin, a year's appreciation. Oh, go back. Go back to there. And I've got to get to 1 hour. Go ahead and make your comment, Augie.
Well, there's the comment to me about Bitcoins in this short moment from last night to now. Someone said that the cartels are big on Bitcoins as a way of exchange and washing money. And so the suspicion may be, if people deal a lot in bitcoins, that they're dealing in drugs.
Well, that might have been the old way. Now there's millions of people doing it, and there are not all millions of drug dealers.
Hmm.
And the fact is, you can trade these, and you can circumvent the banking system in some ways. You still have to buy stuff. The fact is, when you actually buy stuff with a Bitcoin, there's a transactional history. And so on the recent scam that the ransomware that was circulating around the world, and those people got Bitcoin, well, you could transfer Bitcoin to them, but when they spent that Bitcoin that you transferred, there's a tracking history to it. So the question is how they were going to get that out. So I actually have the Ethereum here now. Ethereum is only at $223. It's went up $2 since yesterday. In the week, it's gone up $58, or about 25%. In the month, it's gone up 132, or over 100%. And in a year, it's gone up from $18 or $14 to $223.
That's a bit of a gain.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So it's safe because?
Well, I don't know if it's any safer than any other currency. But if you're trading yen for dollars or mm-hmm. or dollars for pounds or euros, you go to an exchange.
And you pay a percentage fee.
So I downloaded this app, and it asked me how I wanted to pay. And it gave me options of using my debit card or a credit card, or I could tie it to my checking account or my savings account for that matter. And I actually have two checking accounts, one I use for online stuff that I only keep that money in that's separate from my other accounts. So I said I wanted to do that, and then I get a pop-up screen that says, which one of these banks do you use? This is on this little phone app, and it's also available on a regular desktop computer, which actually I was using because I can type better that way. I click the Bank of America, and it takes me to my Bank of America logon, and it says, you know, we're turning you over to the Bank of America site, and you log on, and then Bank of America sends them a confirmation that you really do have an account, and then you go back, and you say, well, I want to, and I don't recommend it. I'm not recommending an investment to anybody. I'm just saying how this thing worked, because I now have over a five-year history of tracking it, and I want in on it. So, but I'm not doing anything crazy. I figured, well, there's three on this particular app, you have the three currencies that I'll talk about in a second. But on these other apps, you can get there's hundreds of these currencies out there.
Mm-hmm.
They're like penny stocks. You might get in on one, and you know it might turn into $100 overnight. I'm just speculating on that, but. Because besides the perceived value, some of these actually have intrinsic value and functional value. But anyway.
Intrinsic value?
Yes. I'll explain that in a moment.
Sure.
Bitcoin is more perceived value. That there's a finite number of these because the methodology called blockchain programming that they're created with.
Like there's only so much gold, but there's an unlimited amount of diamonds.
Right. There is? You can create carbon, you mean?
Carbon's very unlimited, yes.
All right. So we're already confusing whatever audience is still with us.
The only reason I bring that as a comparison, gold has a very clear-cut limitation in terms of volume.
And when these things are created, at least the major ones,
right.
the algorithms on how they're created are known to a certain extent. For example, Bitcoin, there is an algorithm that releases a certain amount periodically.
Mm-hmm.
Into the circulation. And you know that it's been happening now for years. And so it can expand because you need that if you're going to have an actual currency that you can use. But backing this up to wherever I was when this thing started. I was buying my $200.
Yeah, you bought in.
So you're thinking, well, I have this isolated checking account, so it's only $200. So what if somebody comes in and takes a couple hundred out of it? I'm going to get rich on this thing anyway. So you do that. So the first thing that happens is it tells you, okay, we're going to send two transactions to your account between $1 and $1.25. You need to check your account, and then you tell us what those two amounts are. so that we can confirm the transfer is happening correctly. So, well, I do that, except in the meantime, Bank of America sends me a text that says, we got these strange texts for $1 and I mean, withdrawals for $1 and $1.22. I said, go ahead and do it. So it lets it through. And then the other side, Coinbase, says, okay, you've told us the right answer. Now what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to buy $200. I put in the $200 and said, give it to me. And they're like, not so fast. First, we're going to send you a text to your phone with a code. You put that in next.
You know who you are.
Yeah. So they and my phone, I put that in. I'm saying, give me my Bitcoin. And they're like, not so fast. Now we're going to send an email to you. And you've got to click on the email and come back to our site.
Wow.
And then I do it. And finally, I get my Bitcoin. And then I get my Ethereum and I get my Litecoin. So there, now, just like if you do a currency exchange, I haven't really traveled overseas, so I haven't done currency exchange, I should say, but I know you have.
I have, yeah.
And there's probably a processing fee, isn't there?
They did an automatic charge.
What is it?
It can be anywhere from 2% on up to 5 or 6, yeah.
Okay. And that's similar to what this is. If you use a debit card or a credit card, and you have to remember, when you pay for stuff at the grocery store, you know, there's a processing fee that the grocery store is paying that you don't see of who knows, 1%, 2% less. So if you use your credit card to buy your Bitcoin, you're going to get a 3.9% service charge going in and going out. If you use your checking account as a debit, an actual, electronic check, it's 1.9%. So really, if you look at it as a currency exchange, it's comparable for your transactional cost. Now, is it liquid? I got my Bitcoin.
I'm smiling now.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's about as liquid as, it's more liquid than your stock transaction, which has to clear before you can withdraw the money from your account.
It can take 4 days, depending on the stock.
Right. And so if I want this back now, it's going to cost me 1.9 or 3.9% to get it back, but as instantly as it went into my Bitcoin account, it can come back out to my checking account.
Oh, wow. Reimbursement.
Yeah. And now some of you may know of a company called Square Incorporated. There's a lot of these mobile credit card processors. You know, you got the vendor at the food market. They swipe your card on their phone, and they take your MasterCard or Visa. Well, Square is becoming the dominant player there. There's lots of alternatives. They're not at 50% of the market, but if you look at their stock, as I have been following, they've more than doubled in a year. They're getting to a critical mass, and they've moved into Europe and Asia.
Are they on the stock exchange?
Oh yeah.
Oh, they are.
Oh yeah. We'll talk about that off the hour.
All right, sure.
I'll give you little tips.
Okay.
But Square, the same thing that's on that farmer's market guy's phone that takes your MasterCard and Visa, you can tell them, I want to pay you Bitcoin, and Square will take your Bitcoin for the merchant.
Really?
The so Bank of China.
A little thing that people put on their cell phone to make a charge, that's called Square.
And I'll tell you more about Square if because we're rambling all over the place now, but I want to try and stay a little continuity here. The Bank of China is now accumulating Bitcoin, has been for quite a while. Bank of Japan is saying it will do transfers and you can interact in Bitcoin. So it is becoming an alternative to the dollar.
Yeah, well, the dollar is up and down, but pretty well stable. And gold is the same way.
When I created this account, I'm jumping backwards just a little bit, one of the things that came up on my screen was a statement from the Department of Financial Regulation for Florida saying you are now engaging in cryptocurrencies. We want to, we have a warning thing for you, but we're well aware of it, and it's legal. It's just risky, according to us.
They're letting you know?
Yeah, but it, not only at the federal level, at the state level, international level, it's now out there. And we're just scratching the surface, and I'm monologuing here, and Augie has barely asked questions.
I don't have many questions because those allegations are probably provable on these high returns. It seems like a win-win based on what you're saying.
Well, Investors Business Daily, all these things have been talking about it over the years and in the past week as it's exploded, because the SEC was getting close to allowing the first exchange-traded fund in Bitcoin, so that it would be traded on, like, for example, an exchange-traded fund, for those of you who are still listening, would be like the Dow Jones index.
It's like a mutual fund.
Would have a basket of funds. Well, there's only one now. It's traded on the over-the-counter stocks. Boy, we're getting obscure now. But people that are interested in this will be interested in it.
Yeah, well, that's a practical outlook.
Yeah.
But there's
an exchange-traded fund on the over-the-counter it's only based on holding Bitcoin. So the underlying value is just Bitcoin. There's nothing else there. It's trading at a premium of 50% to the cost of Bitcoin. Because people are so lazy and not wanting to research enough to know they can buy Bitcoin right on their phone, and they don't have to hold a fund to have another level of trust to think that the fund is doing it correctly, and then trade that fund and get your money back. When you now, on this phone, can go in and out of Bitcoin to dollars with your fingertips.
Wow.
Now, phase two.
So what? But before
yeah,
you go
ahead. You continue. We got
fund,
10 more minutes.
The fund is something that people can look to and say, "I know something about that,"
right,
or "I've heard of that," or "I trust that." Bitcoins are still a scary thing for a lot of people.
Yes.
Or maybe not so much. But it's and the NPR report, as I mentioned earlier, cited as a money washing, money laundering thing. For the cartels.
It could be.
Yeah.
But so are banks.
So what?
So are banks.
Well, depending on...
Before Bitcoin, where do you think the drug companies...
supposedly depending on the bank. Not all banks? Or are you saying all banks are?
Well, no. Just the ones that are.
Well, of course that's true.
Yeah. We had the banks in Miami were notorious for this. The Bank of Credit and Commerce. The Cali banking industry in Colombia before the Medellin cartel took over. Colombia did it in a very civilized way for their drug dealers. There were 2 days a year that the Cali banking system, which was one of the major financial centers in Colombia, where the rules were suspended, and you could move whatever money you wanted without reporting it.
For 2 days a year.
Yes.
Wow.
It's very civilized. And then the Medellin cartel, Pablo Escobar came in and messed up a good thing. It was very, very, very civilized. And so, you know, we have that situation.
If I listen to Tom Hartman on Monday, he'll say, in these bubble times, you got to buy gold.
Okay.
And so Tom Hartman is a liberal. And
you can trust him.
Well, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you trust him or not trust him. I'm just saying that's what he says. And a lot of listeners hear that as liberals. This very liberal guy who actually has a program on RT, television program, as well as radio syndication that he's got. So what do you do when people compare this to gold?
Well, gold, we touched on that earlier, and has some industrial use. It has a aesthetic use. As an artist, you could probably speak to that pretty much. Did you have people that wanted would pay a premium for gold in their art that you were making?
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
So, and you made a profit on the gold?
If I included gold in the projects, yeah, gold would bring a profit.
I mean, you just didn't say you had a premium for the craft
When I designed the churches, well, we used a lot of gold leaf, and we bought it in those days. We bought it from a company called Hastings out of Pennsylvania. But there were other places as well. But gold leaf was not cheap, and gold leaf was pure, and it took a bit of skill to apply it and make something. Usually the thing that was gold leaf were stripes to decorate arches and things like that in the churches, and then pillar caps and so forth. And when you did pillar caps, you were coating it heavily like a piece of sculpture.
So there is some functional use for gold.
In that regard, yeah. But that's leaf.
Right. But if you think of all the gold in the world, could you use all of that gold for the industrial and functional things that you've done?
I would say, with platinum being involved, the two together, they're shorter in supply, but it's hard to know.
Right, I should rephrase it. Is there any of those uses that you couldn't find a substitute for?
Oh, of course, you can always find a substitute.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to come back to that momentarily.
There are synthetic golds and things like that, but you're about to get a call.
Caller, give us a call at 941-745-1490. 941-745-1490. I had my back turned to the phone, so if you had just rung it, I missed you, but would be happy to talk to you again.
And please call back, caller. Make another call, if you would. But light's not going on. That's kind of curious.
Give it a try. Caller, no?
Oh, not there. Okay.
Anyway. Sorry.
There you go. We missed that. Well, maybe we didn't. Maybe there's the wrong button.
Keep talking.
All right. Gold is a commodity that has decorative use, and traditionally in church artwork it was used a lot in the statues and things like that. Gold leaf was the primary use. But gold plating is done as well for things like church silverware, church candelabra, things of that sort, the gold plating, but and or special things like a sculpture or a statue or some kind of figures that are created. But plating is makes the use of gold much more costly, and not more costly, but as a costly application. Do we have a caller?
We're going high tech here. I don't know why the TELUS isn't lighting up. That is what we use to bring callers on. But we are going to go use the speakerphone here, and I am going to take my mic down here and say hello to Lawrence. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, Henry. Good afternoon, August.
Hey, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking. I was listening to Henry trying to explain to you, Mr. Dinosaur, about Bitcoin. Do you still have a Cricket phone?
What's your point, Lawrence?
You know what my point is, don't you?
Well, I may guess
what,
that.
What can you illuminate for us on this?
Yeah, give us some.
I would illuminate that this is the sign of the future. The economy is pretty good and heading in the right direction. And I'm sure that that's what you were elaborating about earlier today.
Oh, really not. Didn't get into that, actually.
And we have to talk separately here, Lawrence, because I'm taking the mic back and forth. I want to know, maybe Lawrence is then going to help us on this next topic that I wanted to get into before we close, which is what could be bigger than Bitcoin, and that's Ethereum. Have you heard of that, Lawrence?
Ethereum? No, I have not.
Mm.
Is that medicine?
But I think Lawrence wants to talk about the direction of the economy and what the contributions of the current.
Well, let's talk about the stock market, August.
Yeah, well, that's part of the economy.
August.
Yeah.
The stock market.
What about it?
I'm doing well. Are you doing well, Lawrence?
Well, I'll tell you what about it is because when President Obama hit 19,000 on the stock market, I do believe August, or at least the village idiot, was touting that it was all up to him. And I believe it's around 22,000 now. And so what's that mean?
Well, I'll tell you what I believe it to be, frankly. I agree with you, if I'm the village idiot you're referring to. The point is that the condition of the economy is so good that it's carrying forward a few months after the last president left and can continue to, unless, of course, we do the thing of defunding the government, which is what the tax plan would like to do and or the health care plan would like to do. So that would be the destructive element that will put a blunt to all of that.
So the economy is looking pretty strong under President Trump.
The inherited economy, yes.
Mm-hmm. The economy?
Well, the same.
Okay, Lawrence, we're going to move on because we only got 5 minutes left. I don't want you to miss out on my illuminating discussion of Ethereum so that you can make money and give Consuela and Gies, your hired help up there in the penthouse, a little extra bonus come Christmas time. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Lawrence. It's been great. Miss the voice of Lawrence. There you go. Names and all.
All right. So we were on a discussion there where we were talking about gold, et cetera, and what its intrinsic value versus its functional value versus perceived value. Ethereum is another cryptocurrency, and like I said, there's hundreds of these out there. But the thing about Ethereum, all of these are based on something called blockchain programming, which I'm not going to try and explain now, and I don't even know if I could. But the Ethereum is similar to Bitcoin in how it is a cryptocurrency, but it is integral to these new blockchain programming. It's intrinsically built into the programming as a medium of exchange. So if you are creating an application that needs to transact with another application, it is built in means of exchange, of a monetary exchange, if you will, between these things. And as these programs get built out around the world and into the infrastructure of the world, Ethereum becomes something precious that is used in that new network of computational network that we're developing, which many people think will become an alternative internet to the infrastructure that we have.
Yeah, there's a big push now for the alternative internet that's coming around the corner.
Well, you might be thinking of the dark internet. Well, which is still the methodology is similar to the IP addresses, and how that works is similar to what we're doing. It's just there isn't a directory that tells you where everything is. There isn't a Google to let you go through the dark web.
That's been the problem all along, right there, the directory that's missing. Yeah.
But this is actual the things that do stuff,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to direct you, the map of that Google is, mm-hmm. the internet that's like a big telephone directory that takes you here and takes you there. This is stuff that actually has to work together that needs Ethereum as its currency to work together.
The perception of a need of an element of organization, which is Ethereum, sounds like it may well be. And
well,
a base.
It's functional need. It won't be able to operate without that currency.
So they're going to tie one to the other.
Yeah, and so that's why that one has had the what was it? From $19 to $250 in a year, something like that. And then that could be even bigger. So anyway, on this, taking us full circle back to the app, I bought $200 of Bitcoin, $200 of Ethereum,
mm-hmm.
$200 of this Litecoin, which was created by some Google engineer,
mm-hmm.
which are the only three they trade on here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look, you will get whipsawed. So you can't put any money in this that means anything to you,
sure.
because it will move 50% in a day on you.
In any direction.
Yes. But when you look at it over time, and it's such an mm-hmm. explosion in the last month, I would not be surprised if that gets cut in half for an extended period of time.
So when you go bankrupt like Trump did four or five times, and you don't have a backup of Saudi Arabia or Russia, you're kind of screwed.
Well, if you put your money all in that, yeah. But if you dollar cost average mm-hmm. over time and you put $50 a week in it, if you look at what the return has been over 5 or 10 years,
people doing that sort of thing they got money to play with, and then of course the cartels do. They can pay you any and all fees.
One last number.
Sure.
This Litecoin, which is the third thing that the currency that they trade on here, which was created by one of the key Google engineers, came out in 2011. For 6 years, and they said $100 of that is now worth $30,000 6 years later.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a nice history. And as I said, you play with money, and you don't want to, if you have to think about it all the time, it's a scary situation to be in.
Wow.
And so.
Well, we have totally breezed through this hour.
I'm really grateful for Lawrence for reminding me of the inherited economy and why it will continue in great shape down the road, because the healthcare bill looks like it's going to be Obamacare ad infinitum, and the tax cuts for the wealthy, which they're anticipating, which I'm sure Lawrence says is why the people are investing in the stock market, even Bitcoins, Henry, is going to do so well. And if they don't do the health to that bill, they don't defund the government will continue much better.
Well, next Saturday on the Henry Raines Show, we'll be back at 12:05, and we'll be looking at the outcome of the negotiations and possible vetoing of line items by Florida Governor Scott of the Florida fiscal budget. And we, on 2 weeks, I'm very excited, about 2 weeks from today, we will have Leon Harris on the air. Leon Harris is an 80-year-old African-American gentleman who actually played for the Kansas City Monarchs in the old Negro League, which was, that was Negro League that I
Boy,
said.
Boy, you'd let it slip.
Yeah,
down,
I wanted to make sure I didn't just let that slur through there. But the Kansas
people.
City Monarchs is where Jackie Robinson came from when he went to the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Satchel play? Satchel Paige.
He played on the Kansas City Monarchs. It was the New York Yankees of the Negro League, and this gentleman played on that team for 2 years. But after that, he got into labor organizing and the civil rights movement. So it's going to be a fascinating look at his life 2 weeks from today.
Got to ask him when did old Satchel come back and pitch again in the first time in the National League, what year that was.
I don't know, but he was still pitching when he was 60 years old.
That's right. He was pitching. He came in at 50.
And he and Dizzy Dean did tours during the Depression.
Exactly.
Which is a whole other story we'll get into in a couple weeks.
Wonderful story.
Thanks to Augie for coming in today. Very relatively short notice. Not as short notice as I've given him sometimes, but relatively short notice. And we'll be continuing this discussion off the air when I'm sure. But we'll be back next week with another Henry Rain Show. Thank you.